Welcome to VMN Volume 3, Episode 16. The date is July 19th, 2023. VMN is produced and transmitted from unceded Abenaki territory of so-called Vermont. This episode contains a recording of a forum held at the Philadelphia PA LGBT Center. The advertisement for the event was as follows. Philadelphia PA Forum, Fighting It Back Against Fascism in the Far Right, featuring Daryl Lamont Jenkins, John Leslie, and Brittany W. Tuesday, July 18th, 6:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Williams Way, LGBT Community Center, 1315 Spruce Street, Philadelphia, PA, 19107, USA. Workers' Voice presents a panel discussion on the rise of the far right, the current offensive against queer and trans people, and how we can fight back. Speakers: Daryl Lamont Jenkins, anti-fascist researcher, founder and executive director of One People's Project, and editor of IdaVox. John Leslie, labor, socialist, and anti-fascist activist. Workers' Voice. Brittany W., educator speaking on the far-right offensive against LGBTQ people in the schools. Racism, anti-Semitism, sexism, homophobia, and transphobia are on the rise, stoked by lies and conspiracy theories. The result is a sharp increase in hate crimes against oppressed people. This hate is being brought forth not only by violent fascists like the Proud Boys and Patriot Front, but also by groups like Moms for Liberty and politicians of the GOP. Trumpism has set these forces in motion in recent years, but the roots of the current far-right surge go deeper into the history of racism that is so ingrained in U.S. capitalist society. White supremacist ideas like the Great Replacement Theory and Christian nationalism are being mainstreamed in one of the two bourgeois parties, as the Republicans increasingly take on features of a far-right party. But the Democratic Party, the traditional party of slavery and Jim Crow segregation, likewise facilitates the current climate of prejudice as it seeks to maintain the status quo on behalf of capitalism. The Biden administration's clamping down on Latino and Haitian migrants on the border is one example of its reactionary policies. Stopping the far right will take a mass movement of millions. Cops, capitalists, courts, and liberal politicians won't save us. The key to opposing the far right is independent, united front counter-mobilization by the working class and oppressed. It also means exercising our right to self-defense in an organized way. Again, that was the advertisement for the event. This forum presents a somewhat different approach than our last interviewee, Alexander Reed Ross. A warning to the listeners, the sound quality is rough in some parts, particularly the end portion with the question-answer segment. But we believe that this is very much worthwhile listening to. Enjoy. This is the forum.
All right. Hi, everybody. Thanks, everybody, for coming to our panel. We have here, speaking of us today, is Daryl Lamont Jenkins. He is the editor of One People, editor of IdaVox, and also executive director of One People's Project. John Leslie is going to be speaking. He's a labor, socialist, and anti-fascist activist, and a member of Workers' Voice. And we also have a Brittany W., an educator speaking on the far-right offensive against LGBTQ people in the schools. So today we're going to talk about what modern fascism is, how it operates, and how we can fight it. So we're going to start off with John. So and we'll also have a Q&A session at the end as well. So we're going to John, take it away.
I'll start. First off, just to say I started on this issue in college, and that's been a long time. You look at me and tell I was a while back, and this issue hasn't gone away. It's just changed. It's evolved over the last 40 to 50 years, and you know, some of the players are the same, but you know, the rules of the game and the way it works is has evolved over time. I want to start with a brief overview of the current situation. I'm mainly going to talk about the far right because I think the term fascism is often misused or overused by some folks, and so it can lead to misunderstandings. I should be using this, I guess. Okay, so white supremacy is part of the bedrock of American capitalism. This country was built on slavery and genocide. The Civil War temporarily free black people from white domination, but the betrayal of post-war Reconstruction meant the reassertion of white dominance through Jim Crow laws and the mass terror campaign of lynching and incarceration. This campaign of terror continues today under the legal guise of the so-called war on drugs and the regime of mass incarceration. The far right in the U.S. is nothing new, but I do think we have to understand the changes within the right that make it an effective political force and a danger to democratic rights and the oppressed. Nazi groups and the KKK have been with us for decades, but they lack a real mass social base and the institutional section of the capitalist class. That situation started to shift with the election of Barack Obama to the presidency. A section of white America freaked out at the idea of a black man in the Oval Office, and the Tea Party, a proto-fascist movement inside and outside the GOP, pushed birther conspiracies and mobilized to make sure that Obama's presidency was politically paralyzed. Trumpism is, in a sense, an outgrowth of the Tea Party. Trump and other far-right tropes helped reinforce the growth of groups like the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers, and it's not surprising then that his 2016 campaign was endorsed by the Klan and David Duke, and a former neo-Nazi leader was quoted as saying, "Trump has set us free." In this period, we've seen the formation and growth of groups like the Proud Boys, Oath Keepers, and militia groups, as well as the reconfiguration of neo-Nazi groups. And we've seen increased operational unity on the ground between far-right groups from Charlottesville to the January 6th Capitol riot. We certainly saw this in Portland during 2020. The current situation is defined, I think, by a backlash against the gains made by people of color, women, and LGBTQ people. Voting rights, affirmative action, reproductive rights, queer rights are all under attack. And why is this happening? A wing of the ruling class, seeing the impending and ongoing crises of the capitalist system, economic instability, climate crisis, and political crisis, are weaponizing culture wars, pitting country against city, and continuing the decades-long one-sided class war against working-class living standards. The capitalist financier Warren Buffett said it this way: "There's class warfare, all right. It's my class, the rich class, that's making war, and we're winning." Culture wars serve to weaken a potential working-class response, and I think the left has to develop a programmatic response that tries to outmobilize and split this reactionary bloc to the best of our ability. Paraphrasing the Bolshevik leader Lenin, our task is security state and the expansion of police powers. This represents a backlash against the 2020 rebellion that followed the cop murder of George Floyd. This rebellion was, in essence, a multiracial working class uprising. And of course, the Democrats and their allies and the NGOs and the reformist organizations did their best to divert this movement. This is why the state and capitalist and private capitalist interests are pushing so hard to build Cop City in Atlanta and other such militarized police facilities around the country. We're also seeing the beginnings of a real working class fight back as unions are growing and strike activities on the rise. Working class people are organizing against high rents and bad bosses, and this terrifies the ruling class. The current onslaught against LGBTQ rights has weaponized stereotypes and lies against queer people and especially transgendered people in an effort to ride hate to power. This isn't just a legislative or judicial campaign, but is being conducted in conjunction with far-right mobilizations in the street against pride events and drag queen storytime events, for example. Most recently, we have seen the growth of a well-financed far-right group called the Moms for Liberty, who were just here in Philadelphia, as a matter of fact, which is Moms for Liberty is making a real effort to capture school boards and enforce anti-queer, anti-black, anti-critical race theory, though they can't really define it, and in opposition to what they call woke ideology. These moms have the support of the GOP right wing and also ties to far-right militias and Proud Boys, and one of the Moms for Liberty actually advocates for the repeal of the post-Civil War Reconstruction Amendments 13, 14, 15, that gave free blacks citizenship, and she's also for the repeal of the 19th Amendment, which granted women the right to vote. So this is what we're up against. Currently, the ultra-reactionary Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is also pushing for the idea of ending birthright citizenship. Florida, at this point, is a testing ground for the right-wing social and political agenda. There have been a sharp increase in hate crimes based on ethnicity, national origin and sexuality. Anti-Semitism has resurged in recent years, and even so-called mainstream politicians use anti-Semitic dog whistles, like referring to George Floyd protesters and anti-fascists as being in the employ of George Soros. We've also seen these so-called lone wolf terror attacks against synagogues, churches, and in places like stores where people of color shop, for example, the Walmart shooting in El Paso. And these sorts of attacks call to mind the neo-Nazi science fiction book, The Turner Diaries, which advocates for these types of terror acts as a way to spark the coming race war. Fascism is a weapon the ruling class uses against workers and oppressed people. As such, fascism depends on the support of a section of capital. While there isn't a mass fascist movement here and now, the potential for one exists, and we have to develop responses that drive these forces back under their rocks. Capitalism resorts to fascism when the normal mechanisms of co-optation, repression, and coercion break down. Leon Trotsky described fascism as a mass movement of the enraged petty bourgeoisie and D-class workers, used by the ruling class as a battering ram against a rising workers' movement. Fascists often hide behind leftist-sounding and populist slogans, but the real goal of fascism is the preservation of the rule of finance capital. The designation far right covers a lot of territory, from the Christian right to white nationalism to outright fascists. The right has grown in numbers and aggressiveness in recent years, both inside and outside of the Republican Party. So-called white nationalists believe that the U.S. is rightly a white nation, a white republic. White nationalism is based on the fear that whites as a social group will lose their privacy in U.S. society. Like, that's a bad thing. Through declining white population numbers and increased immigration. White nationalism sees this as a result of the conscious policy of liberal elites, often Jews, of course, to replace the white population with a population that racists think will be more easily controlled, the Great Replacement Theory. Christian nationalists assert America is and must remain a Christian nation. Theirs is a vision of theocratic rule where the separation of church and state is non-existent. And frankly, there's a lot of overlap between white nationalism and Christian nationalism. White nationalists and Christian nationalist positions that were once on the fringes of politics are now more mainstream. For example, as I talked about, the Great Replacement Theory. Conspiracy theories play a key role in the growth of the far right, and these theories really took off during the pandemic. Does this mean that the GOP itself is fascist? I have a hard time saying that that's true, but there are fascist-minded elements inside the GOP. I would situate the GOP as something more akin to the far-right populist parties of Western Europe and Eastern Europe that we've seen grow up in recent years. Honing in on the end point, folks. So, socialists advocate for united front mass mobilization against the right. This means mobilizing the broadest possible social forces to oppose them in the streets. Anti-racist action used to say we go where they go, and this is an urgent task. Fascism in the far right can't be allowed to mobilize unopposed. We need popular education campaigns to expose the connections on the right and the sources of their money and power. We can't rely on cops, courts, and politicians to save us. Speaking of cops, the socialist Farrell Dobbs wrote this: the more the lines of confrontation deepen and sharpen, the more the tendency is for fascist formations to attract adherents within the police department. It's an important thing to keep in mind. The line of the police is to defend the exercise of the formal democratic rights of the fascist on the one hand, and not to see the violations of the democratic rights of the fascist victims. Meanwhile, the cops take full advantage of any violation of bourgeois democratic law that the anti-fascists may commit. We advocate for political independence from bourgeois political parties. Voting for Democrats won't stop the right. Biden, at best, is a snooze button. We also don't want to reinforce illusions about bourgeois democracy. We know that bourgeois democracy is a screen for the dictatorship of capital. At the same time, we must defend the hard-won democratic rights. We reject slogans calling for the state to repress the free speech of fascists. Does this mean that we defend their free speech? No. But it means we have to be careful not to hand our enemies the issue of free speech and the opportunity to paint us as anti-democratic. We believe in the right to self-defense. This doesn't mean isolated groups street-fighting fascists, but organized defense guards based in the mass organizations of workers and the oppressed. part of our task going forward is preparing the working class and the press to fight for power. The only way to permanently end the fascist threat is to permanently end capitalism. This means organizing the most advanced layers of the working class and the press into a revolutionary combat party capable of leading struggles. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Next, we're going to hear from Brittany, who is a trans educator. So take it away, Brittany.
Hello. So yes, I'm Brittany. I've been a school teacher in Philadelphia for about a year now, starting my second at actually a completely different school this coming school year. But so I'm going to be talking a bit about Moms for Liberty and, well, the far-right attack on school boards. A lot of the reason I actually came here is because I grew up in Bucks County, or I volunteered to talk here, is because I grew up in Bucks County and actually graduated from Penn Ridge School District, which is one of the ones that's where the school board has been basically taken over by the far right at this point. A lot of the general summary of what's been happening in, and like this is a coordinated strategy of far-right trying to take over school boards and use that to change the curriculum, get books banned from classrooms, and, well, make teachers' jobs a lot harder, with the end game of basically tearing down the public education system. A lot of the events in the news have been, like, book bans and forced outing laws, sports bans, that sort of thing. But there's also a lot of more... but I'm going to talk mostly about Penn Ridge, which is what I know. The few of the ways that they've really come across to try to seem as the quote-unquote reasonable side is they is like Penn Ridge School Board has quote-unquote banned activism among staff, which has basically... is very broadly interpreted to mean anything from like pride pins to putting your pronouns in your your email signature. But of course, that gets applied unequally is say the Christian right isn't subject to any of that because of so-called religious freedom. And in a similar vein, like they're trying to limit the amount. They're trying to limit how much LGBTQ-related content is talked about in classrooms, in schools, even in, like, the upper grades, because of, quote-unquote, parents' rights. Now, this is harmful for a lot of reasons. The obvious one because it discourages queer people from becoming educators, but even beyond that, when you start to get into the upper grades, and students are really starting to figure out who they are, how they fit in with the world, that sort of thing. A good number of students will realize that they're queer, and having an adult there as a role model can really help them better understand that. I mean, I'm speaking of this as somebody who has had a kid come out to me as non-binary during class one day. Beyond that, the other harm that the ban on like activism towards anything queer related really does is that it also limits really what it really limits what topics can be addressed in the classroom, because they have this emphasis on putting teachers under a lot more scrutiny. So if say you're teaching something like a science class or something, or like an ELA class where there are themes of homosexuality mentioned in a book, or even like someday if you'll get like a kid just randomly asking you a question about like someone who's queer, or like they'll all the time they'll use the word gay as like an insult, and yeah, even today, yeah, it's like it makes it a lot harder to respond to that when you as a teacher know that you're going to be under this microscope if somehow this gets back to one-upping parent,
and then that goes to the school board or the principal, it simply creates an extremely toxic culture for teachers. The other thing that is that I want to get into is the whole thing about critical race theory. Is what I see these bans on critical race theory as is largely as historical revisionism, basically trying to teach American history in a way that doesn't paint this country as racist, which it has been since its inception. And the big problem with that also is like happening in school districts, and Penridge in particular. What the situation is that the school board has hired like this external consultant who is on this indefinite contract to basically review and rewrite their curriculum. This consultant has ties with Moms for Liberty. He actually spoke at their convention. I went and read the whole speech online later. And one of the things that like he talks about teaching African American history as being racist in a way that, yeah, that's how these people think. But beyond that, like, it's definitely one of the things that these people are doing is they're aiming for school boards and school districts that are in areas that are fairly susceptible to this to begin with. Like, using Penridge as an example, if we go back, like, what, 14, 15 years now to when I was in ninth grade, Penridge isn't some bastion of progressive politics or anything. It's still way out in Bucks County, very conservative area, and to the extent, like, even back in 2009, my history teacher taught me that the Civil War was about states' rights. I know that's bullshit, but that is the curriculum they had back then. And so they're taking these school districts that may or may not have made progress in, honestly, probably haven't made progress in the past 10, 15 years, and trying to push them back even further. And they're doing this in a way that makes life really difficult for teachers. Like, I mean, again, going back to the speech of this consultant, he was talking about requiring teachers to, like, submit every single external material they bring into the classroom for review. I don't, like, most teachers, self-included, are extremely busy during the school year. We don't have time for that on top of every other thing we have to deal with. And beyond that, it's also the other problem with this whole parents' rights group, the parents' rights line, is that a lot of these parents are claiming they should have absolute control over what their child gets taught when, which, when it comes to teachers, is a big problem, because when you have a classroom of 20 to 30 students, as is the case in most districts, you physically cannot meet the demands of every single parent at once. It's impossible. And beyond that, I am a firm believer in the phrase that it takes a village to raise a child, in which means that, okay, yes, parents absolutely should do their best to raise their child how they feel appropriate, but also part of that is that these children are going to, once they grow up, they're going to be exposed to a world full of people who are very, very different than they are, and they'll have to learn at some point. They're going to have that adults or authority figures in their life are going to give very different opinions. And even beyond that, I think it's just extremely short-sighted in that even if these adults say, oh, the teacher can't say that, kids can find this stuff out, will find this stuff out from other kids. Like anybody who's been in education knows, you will never see or hear every single thing that happens. It's just impossible. So it's ultimately getting into like the goal, what their end goals are, as I mentioned earlier, dismantling the public education system. Like, ultimately, they don't want to teach kids to think critically. They don't want kids to have any skills beyond what makes them useful workers. The capitalist class. Yeah, anyway. And beyond that, it's simply not, they don't want kids to be able to think for themselves and question what they're taught. That's an important skill that most educators I see would agree is necessary for kids to participate in democracy, participate in society, and simply function as adults. In terms of what you can do, what can be done about this, obviously, organizing in your community. If you can show up at school board meetings with a bunch of like-minded people and make a lot of noise, that can have an impact. The other thing is, again, going back to the fact that kids will find out things even if adults don't want you to. If you have a kid, teach them about racism. Teach them about queer issues. And like, talk to your kid about race beyond just, oh, people of all different skin colors and stuff. Like, talk about the experience, how the differences between Black American people of color have had from white people. Make sure they know that, even if their school isn't teaching that. And the last thing I have heard has had some effectiveness in terms of like schools that are all about, districts that are all about banning books and stuff, is simply finding ways to clog up their system. Like, it's like the left can do it is simply submitting random book review requests for like several weeks because of sexual content of all things, which like, yeah, I mean, if we're talking like we're talking books, most of the classics have some sort of sexual content. Shakespeare is incredibly dirty. Yeah, it's so anyway, that's everything I have to say.
Thank you.
Let me
move on to Daryl
Jenkins.
Daryl,
finish
us off.
Thank you, and I want to thank everybody for being here. I want to thank John for inviting me, and I really do appreciate having the opportunity to talk to everybody about what it is that we're dealing with, what it is that we have been, what we can do in order to prevail. And honestly, we will prevail, because unlike the right, who is just basically working to win, whatever the heck it is they want to win, we are working to grow, to build, to evolve, to live. They're not doing that. Everything that they have worked for in the past, I would just say the past 30 years has been on a very, very soft foundation, one that will crumble upon our presence, and that's what they're afraid of. I mean, it was mentioned that it was Barack Obama that really lit a fire under their behind, saying, uh-oh, we're the generation that allowed a Black president in. Now, regardless of how you may feel about said Black president, that happened. And that was a shot across the bow that said, oh, Black community's coming up. They're about to do something to us. To some extent, that's true. But as somebody had said during the midst of the George Floyd protests, be happy that we are just looking for justice and not revenge. or who was it? I think it was. I don't want to misquote, but I think it was Langston Hughes or somebody that's. You know what? I'm going to let it go because I cannot remember the quote exactly, and I don't think it'll be fair. But here's the thing: there's so much to unpack from what we had heard just in the past couple of minutes alone. And especially after what we have been dealing with over the past couple of weeks alone with Moms for Liberty coming here in Philly. I'm just coming back from, by the way, Atlanta. I was there for the weekend to promote a few books that we are putting on. But yes, Cop City is strong there. And believe it or not, they're winning because they're pushing back. They do have this, that there's a park of force that they want to, that people want to maintain. They want to turn that into a facility where they can train police officers and also a movie studio. They want to use it as a set for movies. It has been, I believe it has been used for movies in the past, but now they really want to just go all out with it. And folks have just been pushing back. And now it's really come to a head with people getting murdered by the police, people getting arrested, and folks are trying to figure out, well, why is this happening? Why is this place so important? And by the way, Democrats are doing it, not the right. And it always seems to be those mainstream liberals that always puts us in this position. It was in the name of fighting crime, mainstream liberals have made black people the target of all the scorn in the name of fighting crime. And in the name of fighting for women's rights, which really isn't. During the early days of the AIDS crisis, in the days of the AIDS crisis, and when people were stepping up and fighting back, they really got their behinds kicked because they really didn't have any real solutions, didn't have any real arguments, and they lost. All of a sudden, you started seeing acceptance of the LGBTQ plus community. This, where we are sitting now, is called the Gayborhood. It would have never been called that 50 years ago, 30 years ago. It shows you just what positions we have placed ourselves in and where we're going to go in the future. And they cannot allow that. They are doing everything they can except win us over. They are not trying to win us over. They didn't come to Philadelphia to talk to Philly. Most of the people that came from Moms for Liberty came from other states, came mostly from Florida and Texas, some from the Midwest, and very few people came from New Jersey, where I'm from, and or Pennsylvania, very few. But it gives you an idea of what it is we have to talk about, what it is, and what it is we have to talk about in particular is how it is they organize and how it is we, and what it is we have to fight, how it is we counter them. And the truth of the matter is, I gotta start off by pointing out something that's really important. Critical race theory is not black history. Critical race theory is the study of how racism is used and applied in mainstream institutions to keep us back. Want a good example of critical race theory? What they're doing right now. What they don't like is the fact that we can teach it to others and we can incorporate it within the history of this country. We're going to talk about George Washington Carver as much as we're going to talk about George Washington. We're going to talk about Ida B. Wells as much as we're going to talk about Nellie Bly, you know? So these are the things that they are trying to keep us from, doing. And they're failing miserably and they know it. So here's the deal. We got to understand how it is they're doing that, what it is they're ultimately are doing. If you notice, I really haven't talked in the past 5 minutes about the attacks that they have been waging against the LGBTQ plus community. I'll get to it, don't worry. But ultimately, it's all one attack. They're attacking the gay community, they're attacking black community, they're attacking immigrants, they're attacking Muslims. Same damn people. It's just like a seasonal thing. Today it's going after the trans community. Beforehand, it was going after Muslims. Beforehand, it was going after immigrants, you know. Beforehand, it was going after black people in the name of fighting crime. Same people, though. It's funny watching Dennis Prager try to raise money to defend women's rights against trans people when he has said that women are responsible for the destruction of Western civilization. So we got to talk about how they are operating. And needless to say, I was out there, and believe me, I had a good time out there with everybody as we were dancing against Moms for Liberty. We was having a ball. We were the Georgia Warriors. I kept on saying that. But I wasn't there just to protest. One of the things we got to also remember is when they come to town, learn about them, discover their tactics, see if you can get into some of these events that they're putting on, however you can. There's a lot of people that did. And that's why we're going to have my part of the discussion via visual aids. This was the swag bag. And there's a lot of things in here that we that can explain, that can give us an idea of what it is that we are dealing with. I also got to point out that in Harrisburg, and that's something we should counter when it happens. So happily, we would not have known about this march if this early if we didn't go inside. But there's a lot of things in here. I'm gonna set this down for a minute because there's a lot of things that I can pull out of here. I mean, they have their little comic books, you know, these works to place books that teach civics, history, and American values in school libraries to benefit present and future generations. We believe early literacy is vital for academic and lifetime successes. Access to quality, engaging literature with timeless lessons is a proven way to improve literacy and spark a lifelong love of reading. I agree.
Yeah, I know, but I didn't know that they were going to take all the books away first.
Well, we will do the honors in putting them back.
Yeah.
See, they're trying to replace books with their own.
That's what I just said.
Uh-huh. And yeah, that is what you said. I apologize.
No. Literacy is like, oh, we didn't know you cared about literacy. No, they just want, that's part of their end game.
Well, their end game is ours because we got this.
Mm-hmm.
What a lot of these groups like to do is put their books into the libraries, of course. There is nothing stopping us from doing the same thing. You go to your public library and you insist. Not, you don't even have to fight the libraries. You just say, I want this book in our libraries. And I say this because I have two books that I'm really interested in getting out there. One, John talked about, mentioned the phrase, we go where they go. That's the title of a book that's being put out by PM, the Empress, called We Go Where They Go, The History of Anti-Racist Action.
That's what you do.
And that's what I do. I was in anti-racist action at one point. Matter of fact, I mentioned in the book, what is my role in the book? We talk about the history of dealing with the anti-choices. Because anti-racist action did more than just that. But it's a good book to read. And it's and the other book, which I'm also I had contributed to, is called No Pasarán. And it's edited by Shane Burley, a really respected writer. It's a collection of essays from anti-fascists from around the world, and I'm one of them. So, but in any case, we have to be proactive in what it is that we do, because we can't keep on complaining about what it is they do. We have the upper hand. They are more afraid of us than we are of them. And we have to give them something to be afraid of now. Pass around anti-fascist dispatches from a world in crisis.
What's the first two words?
No Pasarán, P-A-S-A-R-A-N, they shall not pass. Okay? I mean, basically in general, that's what it means. Anti-fascist dispatches from a world in crisis. I've been going around bookstores all over the country basically promoting this book, and We Go Where They Go. And the important thing about it is also that we are doing it in our independent bookstores that we run. And protect your bookstores, because that is where we all go to talk and meet and discuss and buy books that no one else would, no one can find anywhere else. But this is an idea of, and you can get those books and you can put the books in the library yourself. And that's what's going to be important. The other thing, and I can go through a whole bunch of stuff in this bag, and I think it's going to be a little bit distracting if I try to do that. But one of the things that's in that book, in that bag, is it's a group called the Conventionalists. It's a group called COS. What they're calling for is a convention of states, a.k.a. Constitutional Convention. In a nutshell, they want to rewrite the Constitution. Mark Meckler, the person who started this operation, basically set it up because he thinks that the Constitution has benefited the left too much. So he feels that we should have a constitutional convention to include new amendments to the Constitution. That's what he says. But those amendments are going to strip every single right that we have as a people. When he says the left, he means basically anyone who isn't a straight white Christian male. You know, I mean, because when you think about it, I just ran down a whole list of people that they have been attacking, whether it's the gay community, whether it's the black community, Hispanic community. You start going down the line. I mean, when you start listening to Candace Owens or something like that, getting mad because there are people who are handicapped modeling, you know. Now you're talking about going after people who are, quote unquote, disabled. They go after them, and after a while, after you get tired, after you listen to what they're saying, after you see what Donald Trump pulled for 4 years, you wonder if they were successful, who would be left? Who would be left? They're even fighting amongst themselves because they don't think that the person next to them is as perfect as they want them to be. So who's left? And you have An interesting thing happened during Moms for Liberty, and one of my people recorded it, and you can actually see the entire speech on YouTube. But the head of the Heritage Foundation, being one of these so-called think tanks. Yeah, the thing about the Heritage Foundation is that he really showed his ass at Moms for Liberty. But you had to pay attention. You had to know what it is he was saying to catch what it is I'm talking about. And what it is he did was he had promoted a book called Roots of the American Order. And it was written by a guy named Russell Kirk. And Russell Kirk is considered to be a legend in conservative circles. He's supposed to be the person that set the standard for conservatism. He is one of the founding writers for the National Review, a right-wing, right-wing magazine that was created by William F. Buckley. He was very pro-South back then, so was the National Review. And I will just tell you, one of the things that he got in trouble for was he didn't really get in trouble for it back then, but in a column he had written about black voting rights in the South. And he maintained that black people could not govern themselves back then. He probably still believes the same. He died in 94 on the second anniversary of the LA uprising. And he believed that black people could not govern themselves. And he said that the Supreme Court notions of one man, one vote as something that will, quote, work mischief, much injuring rather than fulfilling the responsible democracy for which Alexis de Tocqueville hoped. The black vote would destroy all that. Now, he believed that America was strong enough to keep black folks in line, but when it came to South Africa, he said that this degradation of the democratic dogma, if applied, will bring anarchy and the collapse of civilization, saying further that it was the European quote-unquote element that rescued the country, and Bantu political domination will be domination by witch doctors who are still numerous and powerful and reckless demagogues. And just to be clear, what I was talking earlier about how they will fight each other, you don't want to hear about what he thought about Jewish people, because he was threatened by neoconservatives who he thought consorted with those of the Jewish faith a little too much. Not seldom has it seemed as if some eminent neoconservative mistook Tel Aviv for the capital of the United States, he said in a speech to the Heritage Foundation in 1988. That ticked a lot of people off. His defenders came from that paleo-conservative side, people like a white supremacist named Sam Francis, a guy named Joseph Sobran, who considered himself to be a counter-Semite, and Pat Buchanan, whose campaign he worked on. You know, that's Russell Kirk. That's the person that Kevin Roberts, the president of the Heritage Foundation, was defending at Moms for Liberty in Philly just a couple of weeks ago. He was promoted, actually, as somebody to listen to. The roots of the American order, as far as Russell Kirk was concerned, were four cities: Jerusalem, Athens, London. What's the fourth? And hold up, I gotta get that one. Jerusalem, Athens. Oh yeah, Philly. Let me make sure of that. I think it was Philly. I don't want to say that wrong.
Plymouth Rock.
No, I don't think it was Philly. I got that wrong. I think I got that wrong. But the whole thing about I forgot the fourth one. But I can't see. Hold on. Okay, so what Roberts said, and I should say something else too. Hold on. Did I find it? That the only cultures that mattered in forming the American order originated four cities. One was Jerusalem, from which knowledge of our good and loving God, where we inherited that. Athens, which he said gave America democracy, and while we credited the city flourishing in art, science, and philosophy, he noted a flaw. Practically the only problem the Greek city-states couldn't solve was, as Russell Kirk put it, how to live with each other in peace and justice, like they're helping with that. So when he fell to the Romans, then Rome gave us some, and then Rome came in on board, and then finally London. Rome. So that was the other one. Rome. I forgot that Russell Kirk was a Catholic. But anyway, that was his thing, was about maintaining white supremacy. Russell Kirk's philosophy was to maintain white supremacy. He said it was the European element that kept things in check in South Africa. You know, and that's who Kevin Roberts of the Heritage Foundation brought to the table. You know. And that's the kind of people we were fighting. In the end, while we're defending one group today, and we will defend another group tomorrow, the bottom line is we got to defend ourselves against them. That's one of the reasons why they don't like Antifa, because we just basically look at them as going after, we go after them regardless. We'll just take them down. It's just, there's nothing to talk about. We don't have to have a discussion about the issues. You are the issue. You want to discuss that? and that's where we begin, and that's where we end. Incidentally, I have to make a point about something when we are talking about the attacks on the trans community, the attacks on books, as if everybody's a groomer or something like that. When QAnon first came into being, you know, QAnon first came into being, they made it a popular thing to just call everybody they don't like pedophiles. And I always thought that was weird. Why would you just zero in on somebody without any kind of rationale? Just call them a pedophile and call them a groomer. Like, we're going to shut up after you do that. And then you look into them, and all you got to do is just look at the Twitter, go to Twitter for what it's worth, look at the hashtag not a drag queen, and just see the list of pastors, politicians, and some of them getting arrested, not accused, arrested and convicted of molesting children or having child porn in their on their computers or whatever. You will find out that somebody that attended that conference got arrested for something like that. Be prepared to blow it up. And you got to start going on the offense against the right, because there is a very good reason why they made it like this. Every accusation is a confession. That's where you put them back on their heels if you start going after them on that. It is time for you want to take the fight to them, that's how you take the fight to them. You start asking them, why aren't they going after these right-wing pastors, these right-wing politicians and such, like Dennis Hastert, former Speaker of the House, Jim Jordan,
yeah.
I don't want to say Matt Gaetz because he was cleared, quote unquote, I'll be fair, for the sake of this argument. I'm raising an eyebrow, but I'm still, you know. And the list goes on and on and on. Let me tell you something. One of the things that I was talking about, we go where they go, and I was talking about how I was infiltrating some of these pro-life groups. I actually didn't say I was infiltrating them, but that's what I was doing. And I went to the Holy Family Church in Columbus, Ohio. I was part of the infiltration, and I came across a father, the head of the church. It's a Catholic church, pre-Vatican II style Catholics. And this guy, his name was Father Kevin Lutz. I found out just a couple of months ago that he's on the list of pastors that have been assaulting children. Okay, so that's one. The other one, this was interesting. I went to, I don't know if you remember when Patriot Front got a white supremacist group called Patriot Front got arrested when they thought that they was going to crash a Pride Fest in Idaho. I was there laughing my ass off as I'm videotaping them getting arrested. But the cops confiscated phones. There's a guy, as of a couple of weeks ago, sitting in jail right now because they found child porn on it. One of the Patriot Front guys who was going to crash a Pride Fest accusing them of grooming children, of hurting children, and he was doing it. We just had a Proud Boy going to jail right now for that kind of thing too. Greg Gutfeld from Fox News. I put this video up on Twitter just recently, just today as a matter of fact. He was attacking teachers, trying to say that they were dangerous for kids and all of that. That was back in April. By May, he was talking about how a hot teacher who was sexually assaulting one of her students was a good thing, how he wishes he was that teacher. She should not be going to jail. And he was doing it as a joke. I didn't think this was supposed to be funny. You know, but apparently when Greg Gutfeld sees a hot teacher, he wants to start talking about Van Halen and all of that. And somehow everything that they have been attacking all of us for is supposed to be okay. Tell them it's not. And they've been doing it forever. I'm gonna add another one who was doing it forever too, Bill Maher. Remember what I was saying about mainstream liberals? Well, actually, he's a libertarian. He was doing the same thing with Mary Kay Letourneau just back in his old show. And I don't want to get too much into Bill Maher because I'll be here forever. But by the same token, that kind of response to that kind of situation needs to be called out and it needs to stop right now, especially since it's coming from right-wing idiots like Ray Cofield and I guess you could say Bill Maher. But the truth of the matter is we have the upper hand in all of this. Like I said, I can go through this book, I'll go through this bag and just pull out some stuff there just to make you go WTF. My person inside was going to buy the Donald Trump rubber duckies, but they were $10. And I said, no, it's bad enough that I got you in there. So, but the thing is, that's what we're dealing with. That's how, what we are dealing with are people who know they are losing. I remember somebody saying they are working to maintain the little enclaves that they have across the country. The problem is they're making us all suffer. Remember, many of us are in those little enclaves. They are not supposed to be running those little enclaves anyway. So folks wherever they are strong, Bucks County, are gonna need help. So we gotta be able to steel ourselves. We gotta be able to be just as forceful against them as they are against us. Now, they came up here to Philly. That wasn't happening. They wasn't going to beat us down. Some of the organizers apparently had rooms in there rooms in the Marriott had to leave because they couldn't sleep because of the dance party. The Philadelphia banners with the trans colors is still around the Marriott. That was a city doing that. Bless their heart, bless the city of brotherly love. Also hostile city.
I'm around to find out.
Yes, indeed, indeed, indeed. And it shows you the strength that we have. We need to start transferring that strength to towns and areas where they're not strong. Because the bottom line is, we can be comfortable and start telling people we can move you up here and all of that. But what if you don't want to move? You built your life where you are. You shouldn't have to move. You shouldn't have to be subjected to whatever some governor running for president is trying to do in the name of fighting critical race theory and wokeness. I love when Lieutenant Governor at Miles for Liberty. They said this at CPAC too. Incidentally, Max Schlapp of CPAC also getting smacked around because of his sexual assault on one of Herschel Walker's aides. So, but anyway, the theme of CPAC and what Mark Robinson, Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson of North Carolina said, they said they're awake, not woke. Sorry, that means the same thing. You're double speaking here, but that's okay. You're not awake if you're going to be in that conference, if you're going to be believing in anything that anybody there is about. But the bottom line is, when they were in that building, when they were in the Marriott, they were scared of us. They know that we can handle them if we need to. So let's really give them something to be afraid of. Incidentally, one more thing. When I said they need your help in their little enclaves, on the 6th anniversary of Charlottesville, there is going to be a white supremacist conference in Nashville, Tennessee. Yeah, just outside Nashville, Tennessee. It's going to be at the Montgomery Bell Park Inn. It's been going on for almost 10 years, if not 10 years, down there. We chased them out of D.C. back in 2010. And they have found a home in Tennessee, and they've been able to build and grow that conference to the point that they was able to organize and network with people who 2 weeks later gave us Charlottesville. This is a dangerous conference, and people are trying to organize against it right now. They need your help. If you want to learn more about it, I can direct you. We got stuff on it on our website on idabox.com. Just to give you a little bit information about One People's Project. One People's Project is an anti-fascist organization that was founded in 2000. We basically research and report on right-wing groups and individuals with the mission that we have been doing a mighty fine job in that. We've gotten people fired from their jobs. We've gotten people, we killed their political standings and such. And our news line is Idabox. You can learn a lot what's been going on via that news. If you want to know more, I'm here. And I just want to thank you for your time. I've spoken enough. I want to hear from y'all.
All right, thank you, Darrell. Thanks to all of our presenters. Y'all did a very great job. All is very informative. Now we have our question and answer section. So I think probably the best way to go about this, if y'all are okay with that, is take a battery of questions to the audience first, and then we'll just leave it off to the presenters. And if anybody on Facebook happens to have questions too, maybe we'll answer a couple of questions in that group as well. Does anybody have anything they'd like to ask?
Yeah,
this is
right. The thing about fascism is quietness. And there has been violence against people who are gay, George Floyd, Jewish people who were killed, all of that. But what happened, the entire middle class lost everything. Comfortable lives, struggled to get food to eat. In those conditions, capitalists financed a civilian standing army whose sole purpose was to attack demonstrations of workers. They would come in here, try and break up this meeting. Right? That's the kind of atmosphere it was. Then Hitler comes to power. It took him 6 years. First, can you imagine burning down the Capitol in New York City. That's what they did in Germany. It took them 6 years to eliminate all opposition. What was the German miracle? He cut wages in half. And you didn't like it? Well, up to you. You see, that's fascism. See, now there was an alternative to this, and the point of moving into a place is going to be collapse of the economy, and fascism is one obstacle for that can't. And that we can't look at it in just this situation that we're in now, but where we're going. And I'm a Teamster union member. At the end of this month, 340,000 workers, their contract expires with the Teamsters, with the United Parts and Service. And there's a woman with a Trump t-shirt. You see? And she needs to battle the company. You see? So she has to figure out how she's going to do that. You know? And the right wing has nothing to say to her, you know. And the alternative to what happened in Germany was the Russian Revolution, where you had determination for all oppressed nationalities, including Ukraine. That's why Putin hated Lenin. So ultimately, it's difficult to see that the workers are a potentially revolutionary class, you know, and that's what I'm saying.
The problem is that it ends up not being about what your philosophy supposedly is, but who has power.
Thanks to all for a great discussion. It's great to be back at the Global Voice Center. I'm wondering, I recently listened to a talk by economist Richard Wolff. He's also a Marxist socialist. And he talks about, I've also been listening to talks by Peter Turchin, who talks about the rise and fall of empire and what happens in civilization when that occurs. I put forth to you all, could you speak to the significance of a broad united front between the working class, unions, and anti-war movements? As this gentleman over here said, there was a woman in your union, or the union you were talking about, who was wearing a Trump t-shirt. And to me, that signals a kind of miscongruence. Maybe you had your class politics in order, but what about your, are you internationalists, right, to understand your aspect? So, and I put forth to you all to speak to the intersections of why we need to have unions and the working class and the anti-war movement in solidarity as fascism is rising, because we know that with the rise of multipolarity, the business class of in this country is fearful of different countries, different economies showing a different way, and possibly a socialist way.
Thank you. Anybody else? Any comments, questions?
This is kind of a question for Brittany, but when you were talking about schools and for mentioning also broadly that part of the agenda is to the downfall of public schools, but also like public libraries and public this and public that, and they're talking about parents' rights, but homeschool your kid or whatever. I mean, how do we bulwark what the definition of public is and what public schools, how could that be stronger? Like what a public library is, what a public school is, you know, and the definition of that. So when they're talking about whatever, it just kind of goes down the drain. You know what I mean? Like what you were saying, like we're stronger and we know what that means, and we don't want to lose our public services, you know, our schools. And I really enjoyed what you had to say, your personal take as a teacher and your experience in that particular area of Bucks County, just all of it blended together to give a lot more specific information. So, I mean, whatever you want to say, you don't have to be real super specific, but this idea of public things being threatened and what are definitions really, how do we make that stronger,
That's a good question. I think
One of the things of like how to make that stronger is definitely being like proactively against like banning any sort of book or anything in public schools, like in schools in general. And like if certain parents like really don't like it, I mean, religious schools have existed forever because of course they have. Like, and homeschooling is also a thing that exists in this country. But like, it's, I think the big thing that makes a public school or any public institution public is that it's not something that any one person can have like an outsized influence on. Mm-hmm. Is that if you don't like what the public school has decided is appropriate for like to teach, well, that's not like you don't get to decide what's taught in a public school's classroom. You assume the principal is competent enough to hire competent teachers, and that they, if you give them the autonomy they need, will prepare your child to be a well-rounded, will teach them the skills they need to be a well-rounded adult and participate in society the same way you do. Like, I think that's what it comes down to, is
just
trusting.
I'm getting in there to do these things because they're just through the school boards, obviously, but they're able to bring books up that are classics for question, and they're able also in libraries, and these are really important public institutions that are like the backbone of, you know, hey, everybody is supposed to be here, like you said, it's for everyone, it's not just for one, so how do they get in there to do that? It's a meeting of leadership and through the school board, I guess, and then they call it politics, right? And I guess, I don't even know how they get that far, but because there should be like a hard line that says, no, this is a public school and can't do that. It's not up for question. It's not obscenity.
I can actually answer that question for
you. Oh, thank you.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Okay. I can actually answer that question for you. It's my friend. He went to the PTA to stop non-fraternity members from the PTA. He went to the president to stop this kind of stuff doesn't happen in the school district. Mm-hmm. That's how you do it. So you gotta get positions of power, positions of leadership, government, politics, so we can just say, nope, you're not doing it. I don't care about your stupid argument. I don't care about your religion or your beliefs. You're out. It's a secular country. You don't care.
And you still are fighting. I'm just wondering how they got in to begin with.
That's what they did. They got these guys slowly in. They did dug their roots in, and now suddenly got DeSantis, who's like, I mean, what the fuck?
I was just getting ready to say what he said too, because you got to bear in mind, other than what the fuck, but I'm not worried about that shit.
Okay, yeah, sorry, if that really offends anyone, let me know. But that's how I speak.
But here's the deal. That is true. When you talk about groups like Heritage, when you talk about the Leadership Institute, which works to cultivate young right-wing activists, and by the way, they were the ones responsible for building up the alt-right, if you look at a group they founded called Youth for Western Civilization. When you talk about those groups, they're also the ones that are trying to cultivate these kinds of candidates. It's not grassroots. Moscow Liberty is not grassroots. They're from the Heritage Foundation of Leadership.
That's so true.
You know? So when you know you're dealing with outsiders in the first place, the first
thing.
He just said it. You gotta run.
Yeah.
You gotta run.
Just listen to you guys talk. Another idea, right? The Teamsters unions. Oh, the Teamsters unions here. Great. Hey, shut down supply lines to these guys. They're done. Turn it off.
Yeah.
You have the supplies for the events. You're done. You have back and delivery to you guys.
Yeah, enough's enough. I mean, we really got it. If we talk about.
That's extreme, but.
We've been successful as anti-fascists in the platform of these guys. You don't see a lot of these knuckleheads on TV or on mainstream radio, because the moment that they show up, everybody starts making a hue and cry. I don't want to see them in our school boards, and we got to just make sure to say, okay, you're not going to be the candidate I support. That person is going to be better for us than you are. So.
Yeah. And that's another good point, is that you can also, like you mentioned, run for PTA, run for school board. Like, it's
it's the barrier to entry in like positions like that is a lot lower than it is for, say, if you're running for Congress.
Because it's local.
Yeah, because it's local.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, everybody.
I believe, Aleka, you had a question?
Yeah, I wanted to draw a line of international need, talking on that about like Christian nationalism and then the connection to like Israel, entire ideology around like Jewish nationalism, and then the way that Christian nationalists are exporting their ideology, you see the like kill like anti-LGBTQ stuff happening in Uganda, that's like a export, but also like the way that they're exporting like a apartheid ideology to India within the fun, the way that like Modi wants to imitate Israel and what they're doing there. And so something about this connection between it, and also just the way that fascism has progressed really rapidly in India, so they are further along in that process. But yeah, I don't know, something about like the religion, like religious religion and nationalism, and then the violence that like, we are seeing all over the world. So, yeah, I don't know about connecting those international solidarity circles, but yeah, can you please speak to that, or that was just an observation.
Also, I want to ask more questions, but also I just want to say that we are going to...
Question of internationalism again, because I think it's very important, and for us, you know, Workers' Voice is a sympathizing organization of the International Workers League, which is a revolutionary internationalist group that's based in Latin America, Europe, and now we're building a section here in the United States. And the capitalist system itself is an international system. You know, imperialism is an international system, and the working class has to have a revolutionary international, I think, in order to succeed and to beat this system. So anyway, if there's no further discussion, I think we can invite you to check out some stuff in the back, and we have newspapers, we have some really cool t-shirts and patches, and
pins too.
And pins.
One people start to guess
this. This shirt here.
Do you have that in a 5 or 6 XL?
Yeah. If you want, I can make one for you.
By all means.
Our comrade Melanie is like so creative and just like, yeah, big ups. But thank you, everybody.
Indeed.
Yes, thank you all so much for coming.
This was VMN, Volume 3, Episode 16. VMN was formerly known as Vermont Movement News and can be found on podcast apps as Vermont Movement News.